From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheesh, hawa, toyoksuk newsom, salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, we've got something special, new, and awesome. It's roundtable readings with Ghostlight Theater. Today, local actors will be working on a live, on-air, open rehearsal-type atmosphere on a scene from Shakespeare's Love's Labour's Lost. We'll talk to each of the actors as well in terms of approach to text work, Shakespeare's language, and rehearsal of a scene like this. We'll also speak with Kate Ross from Juno Ghostlight Theater about this project and how it originated. Roundtable readings from Juno Ghostlight Theater coming up on this episode of Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. Just a quick reminder, looking for those last-minute holiday gifts? Well, KTOO has you covered with gifts for the public media fans in your life. Design your own hoodie or sweatshirt with one of our vintage logos, or get tickets to two upcoming KTOO events. The Alaska Theater Festival Radio Plays coming at the end of January involving the Alaska Theater Alaska and Ghostlight Theater, and David Sedaris coming back to Juno next May. Just go to ktoo.org for merch sales and ticket links. Gunath Cheesh and happy holidays. And now we have roundtable readings with Juno Ghostlight Theater. It's a pleasure to have actors in the studio. We're going to be looking at and reading a scene from Love's Labour's Lost by William Shakespeare. But first, I want to introduce Kate Ross from Juno Ghostlight Theater. She's a board member at the theater, and talk to her about roundtable readings and how this crazy idea came about. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Gunath Cheesh for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, so roundtable readings. How did we get here today?
Yeah, so Juno Ghostlight Theater for the last 4 years, so this will be our fifth year, this upcoming radio play festival, we have been doing these full-length radio plays. And so we started during COVID and had to record them remotely and put them together. In the last few, we've been able to do live in studio. And we were having so much fun producing them and just speaking language on the air, listening to it, getting people involved, making it accessible so that people could tune in from anywhere by listening to the radio or listening online, and just getting theater out there in a different way than we've kind of had in Juno recently. And so I always thought, hey, it'd be fun in the future to do something else, a little more low-key, a little more in-depth on discussion as opposed to in-depth on the production side. And so I've kind of had this knocking around, maybe someday in the future, it would be fun to figure out a way to get more theater on air. And then after you came and did War of the Worlds with us last year, last February, just being in discussion with you about ways we could come together in a partnership between KTOO and Juno Ghostlight Theater, and this is kind of what we landed on.
Yeah, so roundtable readings, yeah, it was an idea that we drummed up over coffee and thinking about how we could do this. And the idea is that to read plays, it might be new work, it might be different plays, might be modern plays, but to also have a discussion around that in terms of what the scenes are, things that normally wouldn't maybe be produced in Juno, parts that people maybe not would regularly play, that kind of thing. And we decided to start with the oldies and the goodies with Shakespeare. And we wanted to find something that was a little festive, and why not love this time of year, right?
Why not? Why not? And why not just go for like the most chaotic scene full of all sorts of fun characters coming in and out and different disguises and pranks and all sorts of silliness and festivity.
So this will be Love's Labor's Lost, and just to let you know, we're going to be talking about, we might be stopping and starting. We haven't read this yet. There's six of us in the room here. And we're going to be reading this through. We sort of have parts assigned. We have ideas, but we might switch it up. We might not. We may not know all of the things that we're saying. We might find it's like sort of a first rehearsal or that first week of rehearsal when actors get in a room and they're like for the first time hearing the words together, hearing their partners read the words. They may have looked through the script a little bit, but, you know, and that's kind of fun. And then we have... you know, Shakespeare, which is the added layer to that in terms of the language, how do you approach that and all that stuff. So let me go around and introduce each of the actors and talk with you just a little bit about your work as an actor. So hi, Kristen Rankin is in the studio. Gunathcheesh.
Hello, hello.
It's nice to see you.
I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, you and I worked on a play this summer, which was really fun. Pride and Prejudice. You were my daughter.
Yes, I was.
And as I played Mrs. Bennet and you were playing Lydia. And so tell me a little bit about your experience as an actor.
Yeah, with Shakespeare and other theater, I have less experience than some of these wonderful experienced folks in the room, less training. But I have done a wide range of theater here in Juno, including Shakespeare, working with most of the local theaters in town.
Nice. And what is it that you like about Shakespeare specifically?
I enjoy...
Or do you hate it? You could hate it. No. Some people hate
it. Yes, that was an assumption. No, I really enjoy doing Shakespeare. I enjoy finding the root of what is being communicated, even if that language is really different than how we normally talk. There's still humor. There's still the same emotions. Mm. And for me, it's like a puzzle of... getting to peel back those layers. And I enjoy doing Shakespeare a lot because I get to explore and find what is going on there. And that might be, maybe not getting what a particular part looks like at first, a particular section, but then exploring that and figuring out what this character is really saying and meaning. And I really enjoy that.
I love that. Okay, let's go over to Travis Clark Morris. Hi.
Hello, hello.
Gunathcheesh for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So you've done some shows here in town. You actually have worked with Theater Alaska in Shakespeare.
I have.
Specifically. I think it was Twelfth Night, and then didn't you do another one?
Midsummer.
Midsummer. Okay, Midsummer was the first one. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your background. I know that you are newer to Juno, although you've been here a number of years now. You've become a Junoite.
I have. Yeah, I've been coming up for about the past 10 years. I started theater way back in high school. I got bit by the bug and then went on to study it in undergrad. That's where I got my BFA. I did philosophy and theater and kind of geeked out on both of those.
Nice.
And then decided to continue my studies, and I went for an MFA in acting, and I moved to New York with my partner, Val, who's also in the room. And we got our MFAs. We studied at a place called the New School. And A lot of the training was in new works, but we did have a specific focus on the classics. So my training kind of goes all over the place.
It's interesting, you know, because like the idea of working on, like I went to classical training as well, not wanting to do classical work at all. You know, I did not want to do that. I was looking to do new work, but I knew that working on the classics or getting trained in sort of the way of script analysis and Shakespeare script analysis and classical text would serve me when working on new work. And it did, for sure. It definitely had that. Did you find that as well?
Yeah, and I'll admit, I would be happy just acting in classics for the rest of my life. I do love it. But then I found actually through doing that, that it did, it's not necessarily a lighter lift to do newer work, but it does feel like when working on classics and working with poetic language, you're swinging more bats, you're lifting heavier weights, and it gets you ready to take on the new challenges of a new work and kind of dive into the language with that fine-tooth comb and be specific about your choices, what the words you say mean, how they affect you, how they affect the way you think, what they make you feel, and how the text informs really who you are as you build out a character, as you get to know who they are.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Robin Gray Davis, gonna cheese for being here, buddy.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, always.
Yeah. So now, what is your background? I know a lot of people know you as sort of a physical actor, like you went to physical training. What does that mean, you know? But you went to specific kinds of training. Can you tell us about your background?
Sure. Yeah, physical theater is definitely a general term for all sorts of different approaches, I guess, to performance, mostly talking about maybe ensemble and devised work, where the actors themselves are creating the performances. And oftentimes that is rooted in improvisation in a studio, in a rehearsal hall, where you may have a theme and you are moving the theme in the space. We could potentially say, since we're actors, we're interested in action and finding what resonates around that theme. So, but having it somehow rooted in our bodies as performers, as creators. So that comes out of a tradition of Jacques Lecoq, who was kind of one of the later contemporary 20th century teachers in Europe that look to rediscover how to use masks, I guess, and mime movement for the actor to make it more lively, more vivid, perhaps, and less acting, where you know you can tell that someone is pretending what they're doing, but really trying to find an authenticity in the performance.
I see.
So, but that's not really what got me into it. It was improvisation and seeing performances by masked performers, contemporary masked performers, and going, wow, that is amazing. It's beautiful. It's powerful, it looks really intriguing. So I kind of got captured into the physical theater world by seeing performances that just kind of blew me away as an audience member.
I know you were part of a group called Strange Attractor years ago, and we had the chance to work together when we actually took Strange Attractor as the four-member ensemble and cast them in a scripted play. Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, and we sort of applied your way of working to that text and kind of went wackadoodle with it, which was a lot of fun. But that's one of my questions is how do you, because of your training in terms of mask work, in terms of physical theater, in terms of creative theater, how do you use that when you're working on a piece of text, a scripted text?
Ooh, yeah. Well, there's like couple different ideas, I guess, in there. One is, as actors, as performers, finding how you are a character and how you're not yourself, potentially. And for me, finding a root, perhaps, in the body, in my the shape of my body, how I hold my body, the rhythms of the character on stage, how I play literally the rhythm of my body on stage. and especially in rehearsal, you know, trying to discover when I step on this to the stage and I am potentially wearing this mask of a character, how in my body physically can I support the character so the character comes to the audience authentically, mm-hmm. and not necessarily me as a person performing. Mm-hmm. So finding if I hold my shoulders a little higher, or I round my spine, or I find you know, my knees are very active and energetic, perhaps that gives me a different sense, literally a different feeling in my body, and that conveys in the voice and also, I hope, the intentions of the character in playing with the other characters in the story.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It makes me think about the idea of, you know, people, the folks maybe thinking of things like, you hear terms in the layman's terms of like, oh, this actor works from the outside in, or this actor works from the inside out. And, you know, you hear the terms method acting and, you know, sort of the general public hears those terms. And of course, in the theater and in acting, we all understand there's a lot of layers and a lot of nuance to all of those things. You can be doing both outside in and inside out work at the same time, right?
Yes.
In terms of discovering who the character is. And they're all tools.
And it is finding the place where they meet, right?
Yeah.
So you have an inner life and you are feeling the feelings that you need to be feeling in order for it to be convincing to your audience.
Mm-hmm.
But also knowing that how you're playing something also it's a visual art for your audience as well. So showing the outside of the character and that world that character inhabits is very important, I would say, as well. But definitely, where do those two worlds meet?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then it's interesting because we're talking about radio plays and how you use sound and voice and all of those things where you don't necessarily have the physical, but you have to sort of create the image of physical through the radio, which is kind of interesting. Valerie Kissel, welcome. Mm-hmm. Good to cheese for being here.
Hi.
So tell us a little bit about your background as an actor. You've also performed with Theater Alaska and some other companies recently. You've been in a few of the Ghostlight Theater. You were in War of the Worlds last year, as was Travis. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I guess I can say that I feel like I've always loved Shakespeare. I remember I had a book of like cartoon versions of Shakespeare as a kid, and like cartoon versions of Macbeth or Romeo and Juliet. And then I had some really awesome teachers. Shout out Cassidy Herding, Bethany Bierman, Kristen Garreau, Ryan Conroe, who all just kind of translated from was it a fantastic, beautiful poetry on the page into something that is alive and relatable and livable, which is very exciting. And so, yeah, I've done acting before.
And did you grow up here in Juneau?
I did, yeah.
Okay, and so you dragged Travis back here when decided to move back.
Yes, accurate, very accurate.
Thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Boston Christopher, your host. We're talking with Juneau Ghostlight Theater folks today, and we're doing something called Roundtable Readings, and we're going to be reading a scene near the end of the play. It's actually probably the end of the play, from Love's Labour's Lost by William Shakespeare. Kate, can you give us sort of the roundup of what this play is, a short couple sentence description about what's the plot of this play?
Yeah. This play, it really has some classic like romantic pairings that end up happening, and you know, hilarity ensues, and then there is the subplot of the other people who are in love with each other and other mistaken identities and mistaken letters and all these kind of classic comedy tropes of Shakespeare. But the main kind of plot is that there's Ferdinand, the King of Navarre, and his three best buddies, and they decide that they're going to be all philosophical and work on their studies and swear off women for 3 whole years. And so they're all So they're all kind of high and mighty about it at the beginning of the play. Like, this is the plan. It's going to be awesome. We're going to get so smart.
Yeah, sounds so much
learn
fun.
Learn everything, right? Yeah.
Spock on it. Right?
Right, exactly. And so, furthermore, the king decrees that, like, his whole court also has to forswear off of women. So not just him, but everybody. And so right after this, they find out that the prince Princess of France is going to come on a state visit with her ladies in waiting. And
I believe it's the king
things.
Forgot that they were coming,
right? Yeah, he just forgot. He was like, oh, no. Oh, we didn't know these hot women were coming to visit us. And so conveniently, there's four of these main women and there's four of these men. And so the four women come and they're forced to stay, you know, a mile away from the palace so they don't tempt these poor philosophy students. Mm. But naturally, everyone ends up meeting each other and falling in love and trying to keep it secret from each other and then finding out in various different ways. And so this scene that we're going to be reading from is the end of the play. And everyone has found out that everyone loves each other. But they all, it's one of those, well, she doesn't know that I know, that he knows, that she knows.
No one's admitting anything
to each other, but the women are all talking amongst themselves and talking about the various favors, like presents, that they have received from the men. And they decide that they're going to try and play a little bit of a prank on them by disguising themselves. The men, in turn, are trying to play a prank on them by coming disguised as Muscovites. So there's a lot of trying to pull the wool over each other's eyes, but they know who their true love is.
Awesome. Totally unique for Shakespeare.
Yeah, unique. Yeah, disguises, mistaken identities.
Right, for sure.
Comedy,
love.
And the women being a little bit smarter than the men.
Yes,
Time hasn't changed that.
No.
So let's see here. So let me say, so we're going to have Kristen is going to be playing the Princess of France. And interestingly enough, Princess of France never gets a name
in
this play.
She doesn't have a name. I know.
Which is so weird. But she is the princess, and that's what she goes by. And she'll be playing that. Catherine will be played by Val.
Yes.
Rosaline will be played by Kate. And then Maria, we will trade around because she doesn't have very many lines. And we'll just do some fancy voice changing, and that will be Maria. And then Ferdinand will be played by Roblin. Barone will be played by Travis. And then the other two gentlemen, Longavale and Dumaine, will also be played by those two gentlemen they don't have very many lines either. And then I will be playing Boyette, who is the basically the servant or the right-hand person for the princess. And then there's some other various parts in there that we will read as we go. And as mentioned, we haven't read through this before. We may stop and start. We may have questions, right? We're treating this as sort of like, let's investigate this cool scene from William Shakespeare's Love, Labor is Lost. And we'll take a break at some point in there. We may not get through the whole scene. This is really Act 5, Scene 2. It is a long scene. And so we're going to see where we get to. But we're just going to have fun with it. And if we have questions, we'll stop. And so I think it'd be fun to just begin this going. And I'll also read stage directions when people exeunt or enter. And that's basically all that we really get is that they enter or exit. And so we are here in, we're outside the castle walls. We're in the grand arena or grand meadow or something along those lines. And enter the princess, Catherine, Rosaline, and Maria.
Sweethearts, we shall be rich ere we depart, if fairings come thus plentifully in. A lady walled about with diamonds! Look you what I have from the loving king.
Madam, came nothing else along with that?
Nothing but this? Yes, as much love in rhyme as would be crammed up in a sheet of paper, writ o' both sides the leaf, margent and all, that he was fain to seal on Cupid's name.
That was the way to make his godhead wax, for he hath been 5,000 years a boy.
Aye, and a shrewd unhappy gallows, too.
You'll ne'er be friends with him. He killed your sister.
He made her melancholy, sad and heavy, and so she died. Had she been light, like you, of such a merry, nimble, stirring spirit, she might have been a grandam ere she died. And so may you, for a light heart lives long.
What's your dark meaning, mouse, of this light word?
A light condition in a beauty dark.
We need more light to find your meaning out.
You'll mar the light by taking it in snuff. Therefore, I'll darkly end the argument.
Look what you do it still in the dark.
So do not you, for you are a light wench.
Oh, indeed, I weigh not you, and therefore light.
You weigh me not? Oh, that's you care not for me.
Great reason, for past cure is still past cure.
Well bandied both, a set of wit well played. But, Rosaline, you have a favor too. Who sent it, and what is it?
I would you knew, and if my face were but as fair as yours, my favor were as great. Be witness this. Nay, I have verses too, I thank Barone. The number's true, and were the numbering too, I were the fairest goddess on the ground. I am compared to 20,000 fairs. Oh, he hath drawn my picture in his letter.
Anything like?
Much in the letters, nothing in the praise.
Beauteous as ink, a good conclusion. Fair as a text be in a copybook.
Wear pencils, ho! Let me not die your debtor, my red dominical, my golden letter. Oh, that your face were not so full of O's.
A pox of that jest, I beshrew all shrows.
But, Catherine, what was sent to you from fair domain?
Madam, this glove.
Did he not send you twain?
Yes, madam. And moreover, some 1,000 verses of a faithful lover, a huge translation of hypocrisy, vilely compiled, profound simplicity.
Oh, this and these pearls to me sent Longueville. The letter is too long by half a mile.
I think no less. Dost thou not wish in heart the chain were longer and the letter short?
Aye, or I would these hands might never part.
We are wise girls to mock our lovers so.
They are worse fools to purchase mocking so. That same Barone I'll torture ere I go. Oh, that I knew he were but in by the week. How I would make him fawn and beg and seek and wait the season and observe the times and spend his prodigal wits in bootless rhymes and shape his service wholly to my hests and make him proud to make me proud that jests. So pertant like would I o'ersway his state that he should be my fool and I his fate.
None are so surely caught when they are catched as wit turn fool. Folly. In wisdom hatched, hath wisdom's warrant and the help of school and wit's own grace to grace a learned fool.
The blood of youth burns not with such excess as gravity's revolt to wantonness.
Folly in fools bears not so strong a note as foolery in the wise when wit doth dote, since all the power thereof it doth apply to prove by wit worth in simplicity.
Here comes Boyette, and mirth is in his face.
Oh, I am stabbed with laughter. Where's her grace?
Thy news, Boyette?
Prepare, madam, prepare. Arm, wenches, arm. Encounters mounted are against your peace. Love doth approach disguised. Armed in arguments, you'll be surprised. Muster your wits, stand in your own defense, or hide your heeds like cowards and fly hence.
Saint Denis to Saint Cupid, what are they that charge their breath against us? Say, scouts, say.
Under the cool shade of a sycamore, I thought to close mine eyes some half an hour, when, lo, to interrupt my proposed rest, toward the shade I might behold addressed the king and his companions. Warily I stole into a neighbor thicket by, and overheard what you shall overhear, that by and by, disguised, they will be here. Their herald is a pretty knavish page that well by heart hath conned his embassage. Action and accent did they teach him there. Thou must thou speak, and thus thy body bear, and ever and anon they made a doubt. Presence majestical would put him out. For, quoth the king, an angel shalt thou see. Yet fear not thou, but speak audaciously. The boy replied, an angel is not evil. I should have feared her had she been a devil. With that, all laughed and clapped him on the shoulder, making the bold wag by their praises bolder. One rubbed his elbow thus, and fleered and swore a better speech was never spoke before. Another, with his finger and his thumb, cried, Via, we will do it, come what will come. The third, he capered and cried, all goes well.
The fourth turned on the toe, and down he fell. With that, they all did tumble on the ground with such a zealous laughter, so profound that in his spleen ridiculous appears to check their folly passions' solemn tears.
But what? Come they to visit us?
They do. They do. And are appareled thus, like Muscovites or Russians, as I guess. Their purpose is to parley, to court, and dance, and every one his love feet will advance unto his several mistress, which they know by favors, several which they did bestow.
And will they so? The gallant shall be tasked, for, ladies, we shall every one be masked, and not a man of them shall have the grace, despite of suit, to see a lady's face. Hold, Rosaline, this favor thou shalt wear, and then the king will court thee for his dear. Hold, take thou this, my sweet, and give me thine. So shall Byron take me for Rosaline. And change your favors too, so shall your loves woo contrary, deceived by these removes.
Come on, then. Where are the favors most in sight?
But in this changing, what is your intent?
The effect of my intent is to cross theirs. They do it but in mocking merriment. And mock for mock is only my intent. Their several counsels they unbosom shall to loves mistook, and so be mocked withal upon the next occasion that we meet, with visages displayed to talk and greet.
But shall we dance if they desire to it?
No, to the death we will not move a foot, nor to their penned speech render we no grace, but while 'tis spoke each turn away her face.
Why, that contempt will kill the speaker's heart and quite divorce his memory from his part.
Therefore I do it, and I make no doubt the rest will ne'er come in. If he be out, there's no such sport as sport by sport o'erthrown. To make theirs ours, and ours none but our own, so shall we stay, mocking intended game, and they, well mocked, depart away with shame.
All right. So they're setting up, like, the boys are going to come. They have given them these jewels or presents, and they're going to switch
pearls,
them about.
Necklaces.
And yeah, all the different things. They're going to switch them about so that they can pretend to be the other to mess with
them. Also wearing masks, physical masks. Yeah, so yeah they're going to be wearing masks. Can't tell who's who, supposedly.
And they're doing just because it's what's more fun than having one up on somebody else who's trying to pull something over on you.
Right. Yeah, I love absolutely. Kristen's line. There's no such sport as sport by sport overthrown. Yeah. I love that. That's pretty funny.
If the boys are going to mess with us, we're going to mess with
mess
the boys.
With
we're
going to
mess right back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love that part in the beginning, too, between Rosaline and Catherine, where they have all those different plays on the word light, because that had a different meaning, or multiple meanings in that little exchange, right? One of which was calling someone, like, a loose woman. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. And so that's just one of those funny little back and forth bits that I just love in Shakespeare, where they're taking the same word and within the span of a few quick, you know, parries back and forth, changing what it means.
The double or triple entendre.
Exactly.
Shakespeare was the Eminem of his time.
It truly was.
But what's cool is that it makes so you can actually, you know, understand the language. Mm-hmm. You know, usually when you go to a Shakespeare play, if you haven't been to one in a while, it takes you just a couple minutes to get acclimated to the language.
To tune your ear.
And then once you start hearing it and the way the actors can interpret that, and you all did fantastic. So,
I would say, like, half of that scene, I think I would have to go back and read again 100%. To really understand, like, what is being said. And that is so important in acting, to know what you're saying, right?
Well,
but
it's interesting.
This is very thick. So when whenever I hear it, I'm like,
But then you do catch words that you do know.
Yes.
And you can kind of like put them together to be like, okay, I think that means this. I misunderstand certain things in Shakespeare all the time. I think it means one thing and then I find out it means something completely different. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just
And know, that's part of our work, thick. Though, is to discover, especially in a classic text like this, like what is being said and,
Well, and the...
the intention too. It wasn't written to be literature. It was written to be spoken. Yeah. Right. The play was meant to be heard, to be seen. So to really understand Shakespeare's language, I think the best way is to get it in people's mouths.
Yeah. Exactly.
Try and take it off the page. Right. Yeah. If you're struggling when reading it, I tell this to students too. Speak it out loud. Get with some friends. Read the thing. Even if you don't exactly know right away what you're saying, put it out into the air, and then see how it lands on you when it's heard, as opposed to just on the page. Because it really does change the thing. It brings it to life.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're going to take a short break, and then we will come back, and the boys will enter. So we'll be right back. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
The snow is snowing, the wind is blowing, but I can weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm. I can't remember a worse December. Just watch those icicles fall. What do I care if icicles fall? I've got my love to keep me warm. Off with my overcoat, off with my glove. I need no overcoat, I'm burning with love.
Perseverance Theater welcomes the community of Juneau to see the world premiere production of Full Contact, written and performed by Alaskan artist Ariel Estrada. Raised in Sitka and trained in full contact martial arts for 20 years in New York City, Ariel performs a harrowing yet humorous coming-of-age story during a tumultuous time, battling through the AIDS crisis and 9/11 as the world turned upside down. Full Contact plays Thursdays through Sundays through December 22nd. Tickets and information can be found at ptalaska.org. This message is sponsored by Perseverance Theater.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We have a special program today, Roundtable Readings with Juno Ghostlight Theater. We're going to continue reading our Love's Labor's Lost scene. It's Act 5, Scene 2. A lot of misunderstanding of who's being who's being what. And the boys are about to enter. I'm here with Kristen Rankin, Kate Ross, Travis Clark Morris, Rob McGay Davis, and Valerie Kissel. And we are reading this scene. Thank you. All of you for being here today, Gunnath Cheesh. So let's continue with where the boys are entering, and Rosaline is going to ask Boyette to check in with these gentlemen and find out what's going on. They are dressed as Russians or Muscovites. Go ahead.
What would these strangers? Know their minds, Boyette. If they do speak our language, 'tis our will. That some plain man recount their purposes, know what they would.
What would you with the princess?
Nothing but peace and gentle visitation.
What would they, say they?
Nothing but peace and gentle visitation.
Why, that they have, and bid them so be gone.
She says, you have it, and you may be gone.
Say to her, we have measured many miles, to tread a measure with her on this grass.
They say that they have measured many a mile to tread a measure with you on this grass.
It is not so. Ask them how many inches is in 1 mile. If they have measured many, the measure then of one is easily told.
If to come hither you have measured miles and many miles, the princess bids you tell how many inches doth fill up 1 mile.
Tell her we measure them by weary steps.
She hears herself.
How many weary steps of many weary miles you have o'ergone are numbered in the travel of 1 mile?
We number nothing that we spend for you. Our duty is so rich, so infinite, that we may do it still without a compt. Vouchsafe to you the sunshine of your face, that we, like savages, may worship it.
My face is but a moon, and clouded too.
Blessed are clouds to do such clouds do. Vouchsafe, bright moon, and these thy stars to shine, those clouds removed upon our watery eyne.
Oh, vain petitioner, beg a greater matter. Thou now requestest but moonshine in the water.
Then, in our measure, do but vouchsafe one change. Thou bidst me beg. This begging is not strange.
Play music, then. Nay, you must do it soon. Oh, not yet, no dance. Thus change I like the moon.
Will you not dance? How come you thus estranged?
You took the moon at full, but now she's changed.
Yet still she is the moon, and I the man. The music plays. Vouchsafe some motion to it.
Our ears vouchsafe it.
But your legs should do it.
Since you
but
are
your
strange.
Legs, sorry, but your legs should do it.
Our ears vouchsafe it.
But your legs should do it.
Oh, since you are strangers and come here by chance, we'll not be nice. Take hands. We will not dance.
That's interesting. I just want to stop because I think this is really fun for people to understand and to hear when you're watching a play and like the words that then get, you know, sort of emphasized that might change the meaning. Mm-hmm. Like Roblin corrected himself there because she said our ears, but then he was going to sort of highlight, well, but your legs should do it because that then becomes, you know, it's a term in the theater, but operative, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like sort of what's the most important word that would be lifted off the page, right, to sort of help understand. And when there's repetition in things or when there's compare and contrast, those things become really important in terms of the language, which is kind of cool.
And it shows how witty the characters are, how quick they are to pick up on this wordplay.
Yeah.
And all of the characters that Shakespeare writes, no matter what class, always assume that they are written very intelligently. They're quite quick.
Well, and it's their way of, and in this particular sense, it's the way of flirting or flirtation.
Right,
the back and forth, the wordplay of it. And who's got what.
Other.
Yeah, for sure.
And
yeah.
Because they're talking about dancing.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, pulling the legs out will help. Just understand what the scene's about. Hey, why won't you dance with me?
Yeah, this is how you dance, right? You use these legs.
So would my ears hear it?
I dance with my ears. I don't know about you.
So let's go back and just start with our ears.
Yeah.
Top of that page.
Actually, can we?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, vouchsafe it. Vouchsafe is grant, right? To give.
Yeah, it's like a favor. Yeah. It's like, please do me this favor.
Our ears give it.
Do you want to start from "Will you not dance"? Actually,
you're like, yeah, will you not dance?
That makes sense. Will you not dance? How come you thus estranged?
You took the moon at full, but now she's changed.
Yet still she is the moon, and I the man. The music plays. The music plays. I'm hearing it now. The music plays.
Play
vouchsafe some. Motion to it. Vouchsafe some motion to it.
Our ears vouchsafe it.
But your legs should do it.
Since you are strangers and come here by chance, we'll not be nice. Take hands, we will not dance.
Why take we hands, then?
Only to part friends, curtsy sweethearts, and so the measure ends.
More measure of this measure, be not nice.
We can afford no more at such a price.
Prize you yourselves. What buys your company?
Your absence only.
That can never be.
Then cannot we be bought? And so, adieu, twice to your visor, and half once to you.
If you deny to dance, let's hold more chat.
In private, then.
I am best pleased with that.
They converse apart, so the groups are going to split apart
a little
bit.
And Ferdinand, who Roblin is reading right now, Ferdinand thinks that I am the princess.
Right,
which is
right.
why he's trying to get me to go off. He's like, ooh, we're going to go talk in private.
Right. Yeah, he's like, let's do it.
I'm like, ooh, I get to mess with him.
And now we see the same thing with other pairs coming up. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they go off and converse apart, and now Barone.
White-handed mistress, one sweet word with thee.
Honey and milk and sugar, there is three.
Nay, then, two trays, and if you grow so nice, this is good, metheglin, wort, and malmsey, well run, dice, there's half a dozen sweets.
Seventh sweet ado, since you can cog, I'll play no more with you.
One word in secret?
Let it not be sweet.
Thou grievest my gall.
Gall, bitter.
Therefore, meat.
They converse apart.
Oh, right. Domain. Will you vouchsafe with me to change a word?
Name it.
Fair lady.
Say you so, fair lord. Take that for your fair lady.
Please it you, as much in private, and I'll bid adieu.
They converse apart.
Maria doesn't take much convincing.
Now, Catherine.
What, was your vizard made without a tongue?
I know the reason, lady, why you ask.
Oh, for your reason. Quickly, sir, I long.
You have a double tongue within your mask, and would afford my speechless vizard half.
Veal, quoth the Dutchman, is not veal a calf?
A calf, fair lady.
No, a fair lord calf.
Let's part the word.
No. I'll not be your half. Take all and wean it. It may prove an ox.
Look how you butt yourself in these sharp mocks. Will you give horns, chaste lady? Do not so.
Then die a calf before your horns do grow.
One word in private with you ere I die.
Bleat softly, then. The butcher hears you cry.
I think there's lots going on in that scene. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yeah.
Part of it is the horns. Giving someone horns,
definitely,
like cuckolding.
Definitely.
In some of the things I've seen on this one, that whole little bit usually is cut down. Like for some reason, Catherine and Longueville are cut down. So they converse apart. And now Boyette says, the tongues of mocking wenches are as keen as is the razor's edge invisible. Cutting a smaller hair than may be seen above the sense of sense, so sensible seemeth their conference. Their conceits have wings, fleeter than arrows, bullets, wind, thought, swifter things.
Not one word more, my maids. Break off, break off.
By heavens, all dry beaten with pure scoff.
Farewell, mad wenches. You have simple wits.
20 adieus, my frozen Muscovites.
Yeah, that's a fun one because they change it from Muscovites to Muscovites, which is kind of cool. Exeunt Ferdinand, lords, and black moors. So they leave.
Are these the breed of wits so wondered at?
Tapers they are with your sweet breaths puffed out.
Well liking wits they have. Gross, gross. Fat, fat.
Oh, poverty and wit, kingly poor flout. Will they not, think you, hang themselves tonight? Or ever, button vizards, show their faces? This, pert Byron, Barone, was out of countenance quite.
Oh, they were all in lamentable cases. The king was weeping ripe for a good word.
Barone did swear himself out of all suit.
Demain was at my service, and his sword, no point, quoth I, my servant straight was mute. Lord Longueville said I came over his heart, and trow you what he called me?
Qualm, perhaps?
Yes, in good faith.
Go, sickness as thou art.
Well, better wits have worn plain statute caps, but will you hear? The king is my love sworn.
And quick Barone hath plighted faith to me.
And Longueville was for my service born.
Domain is mine, as sure as bark on tree.
Madam and pretty mistresses, give ear. Immediately they will again be here in their own shapes. For it can never be they will digest this harsh indignity.
Will they return?
They will. They will. God knows, and leap for joy, though they are lame with blows. Therefore, change favors, and when they repair, blow like sweet roses in this summer air.
How blow? How blow? Speak to be understood.
Fair ladies massed are roses in their bud. Damast, disc-mast. Now, this is interesting wordplay.
Yeah, word that's
player. A good one. So, fair ladies massed are roses in their bud. Dismast, their damask sweet commixture shone.
Say that 10 times fast.
I know, right? their damask sweet commixture shone are angels veiling clouds or roses blown.
Avant, perplexity. What shall we do if they return in their own shapes to woo?
Good madam, if by me you'll be advised, let's mock them still, as well known as disguised. Mm-hmm. Let us complain to them what fools were here, disguised like Muscovites in shapeless gear, and wonder what they were and to what end their shallow shows and prologue vilely penned and their rough carriage so ridiculous should be presented at our tent to us.
Ladies, withdraw. The gallants are at hand.
Whip to our tents as rose run o'er land.
So they leave, exeunt the princess, Rosaline, Catherine, and Maria, re-enter Ferdinand, Barone, Longueville, and Dumain in their regular clothing.
Fair sir, God save you. Where's the princess?
Gone to her tent. Please it your majesty, command me any service to her thither?
That she vouchsafe me audience for one word.
I will, and so will she, I know, my lord.
This fellow pecks up wit as pigeons peas, and utters it again when God doth please. He is wit's peddler, and retails his wares, and wakes and wassails, meetings, markets, fairs. And we that sell by gross, the Lord doth know, have not the grace to grace it with such show. This gallant pins the wenches on his sleeve. Had he been Adam, he had tempted Eve. A can carve too, and lisp, why, this is he that kissed his hand away in courtesy. This is the ape of form, Monsieur, the niece that, when he plays at tables, chides the dice in honorable terms, nay, he can sing a mean most meanly, and in ushering mend him who can. The ladies call him sweet. The stairs, as he treads on them, kiss his feet. This is the flower that smiles on every one to show his teeth as white as whale's bone, and consciences that will not die in debt pay him the due of honey-tongued boy yet.
That is a long speech about one guy, right? Yeah. there's a lot
He's
of wordplay in there.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. Go ahead, Ferdinand.
A blister on his sweet tongue with my heart that put Armato's page out of his part.
See where it comes. Behavior, what wert thou till this madam's showed thee? And what art thou now?
Re-enter the princess, ushered by Boyette, Rosaline, Maria, and Catherine.
All hail, sweet madam, and fair time of day.
Fair in all hail is foul, as I conceive.
Construe my speeches better, if you may.
Then wish me better. I will give you leave.
We came to visit you, and purpose now to lead you to our court. Vouchsafe it, then.
This field shall hold me, and so hold your vow. Nor God, nor I, delights in perjured men.
Rebuke me not for that which you provoke. The virtue of your eye must break my oath.
You nickname virtue. Vice you should have spoke, for virtue's office never breaks men's troth. Now, by my maiden honor, yet as pure as the unsullied lily, I protest, a world of torments though I should endure, I would not yield to be your house's guest. So much I hate a breaking cause to be of heavenly oaths, vowed with integrity.
Oh, you have lived in desolation here, unseen, unvisited, much to our shame.
Not so, my lord. It is not so, I swear. We have had pastimes here and pleasant game. A mess of Russians left us but of late.
How, madam? Russians?
Aye, in truth, my lord, trim gallants, full of courtship and of state.
Madam, speak true. It is not so, my lord. My lady, to the manner of the days in courtesy gives undeserving praise. We four, indeed, confronted were with four in Russian habit. Here they stayed an hour and talked apace. And in that hour, my lord, they did not bless us with one happy word. I dare not call them fools, but this I think. When they are thirsty, fools would fain have drink.
This jest is dry to me. Fair, gentle, sweet. Your wit makes wise things foolish. When we greet with eyes best seeing, heaven's fiery eye, by light we lose light. Your capacity is that of nature, that to your hue store wise things seem foolish, and rich things but poor.
This proves you wise and rich, for in my eye
I am a fool and full of poverty.
But that you take what doth to you belong, it were a fault to snatch words from my tongue.
Oh, I am yours and all that I possess.
All the fool mine.
I cannot give you less.
Which of the vizards was it that you wore?
Where? When? What vizard? Why demand you this?
There, then, that vizard. That superfluous case that hid the worse and showed the better face.
We are descried. They'll mock us now downright.
Let us confess and turn it into a jest.
Amazed, my lord? Why looks your highness sad?
Help! Hold his brows! He'll swoon! Why look you pale? Seasick, I think, coming from Muscovy.
Thus pour the stars down plagues for perjury. Can any face of brass hold longer out? Here stand I, lady. Dart thy skill at me, bruise me with scorn, confound me with a flout. Thrust thy sharp wit quite through my ignorance. Cut me to pieces with thy keen conceit, and I will wish thee never more to dance, nor never more in Russian habit wait.
Okay. That's where we're going to have to
cut it there. I know, like, we could just keep going.
Oh, he's going to talk for a while.
They talk for a while. But they discover that and then they sort of make fools of them, and then they have this little thing with the nine worthies, this whole scene where they do this performance. And if you don't know the Nine Worthies, look that up. It's really interesting history. And then there's other stuff that happens near the end of the play that we're unfortunately not going to be able to have time to get to. But I'm just curious, like, that was really fun. How did you all feel about that? That was really kind of cool to hear that language and to hear it so plainly, really, which was kind of nice.
It was super fun. Fun to get a rhythm with the others and to banter back and forth.
And it's fun to be in process, right? To get a chance to rehearse something, to work on it with other artists and actors, and also I think to share the process with people, right? That I think so often I think we can get caught up in the mistake that everything always has to be polished, everything has to be finished, and sometimes that takes away, I think like you were talking about before, Roblin, it takes away some of that authenticity, or it can.
Yeah.
And to share process and to work in that way and to bring that to the public is really a treat.
And in rehearsal, that mistakes are our best teachers often, that we, by making the mistake, especially with language, we learn, oh, no, I should really use this as the operative in that sentence. It makes much more sense.
And especially with Shakespeare, too, right? Because it can seem like such dense language. But like Travis said earlier, when you start speaking it out loud, it kind of clicks you hear the rhythms and you start to see, oh, that's where that joke is. And that's why that word is repeated. So, yeah, what a fun opportunity to get to play and speak this stuff out loud.
Well, thank you, Juno Ghostlight Theater, for coming in and helping us with roundtable readings. We look forward to more of these in the future. Who knows? no, the future. Not futures, no, future.
The future.
Multiverse.
In the multiverse.
Who knows what we'll do next, but stay tuned and also tune in for the Alaska Theater Festival radio plays at the end of February. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program. Thank you, Gwyneth Cheesh. We'll see you next time.